This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from the Tantalk Radio Network studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Before I introduce my first guest, I just want to remind everybody in the area that one of our local authors, Gino Bardi, is going to be reading tonight at Wordier Than Thou. It's at Studio 620 in downtown St. Petersburg. And he's going to be reading from his wonderful book, The Cow in the Doorway. So have a look at the website and try to make it down there tonight. It's going to start at 7 o'clock. And the book is hilarious and Gino's fantastic. So come out and support him. Well, now I'm really excited. I have two guests today, back to back. First, I'm going to talk to the author, and then I'm going to talk to her agent. So this is really exciting for me. Tracy Chi is, well, just amazing. Hi, Tracy. Are you there?
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this is exciting. What can I say? I think you're the first one I've ever interviewed who is called the instant. An instant New York Times bestseller. I mean, I get a lot of New York Times bestsellers, but you like, they put that instant there. So what happened? Wow, this is fantastic. Your book, The Reader, is, well, you know, for somebody like me who loves books, you have created a fantasy world where no one knows how to read.
Right. I tell this premise to book lovers, and they all kind of react with horror. I have to go, no, it's really not that bad.
I know. It's a frightening thought.
Yeah. And so in this world of the reader, it's called Kalana, and for most of the population, reading just doesn't exist. They don't even know that there's the possibility of an alphabet or the possibility of writing or recording their histories. Because a secret society has kind of been hoarding literacy amongst themselves and keeping it from the rest of the population.
And it is the most precious thing of all that they've got. It's more valuable to me than gold. I would give up gold before I would give up being able to read.
Yeah, I would too. I think because in this world and in ours, reading and writing is power. You know, it's in our world, it gives us this kind of magical ability to communicate across great distances and to communicate across time or to influence other people's thoughts and their actions. And I take that just a little step further in The Reader, where reading is actually magic. So you can actually kind of gain these powers from learning how to read.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the story. It's a story about a girl named Sephia, and she's entrusted with a book.
Yeah.
And at first she doesn't even know what it is because she's gone through a lot of trials and tribulations by the time we meet her.
Right. She's a 16-year-old girl who has lost pretty much everything and everyone she's ever cared about. By the time the story begins, she has lost her mother to illness. Her father has been tortured and murdered, and she is now on the run with this this woman she calls Aunt Nin, kind of like a grumpy old lady that has kind of adopted her. And she has this strange rectangular object that she found the day her father was killed, and she doesn't know what to do with it, and she's kind of accepted that she shouldn't kind of investigate it because Nin's so scared of it. But then Nin is kidnapped, and Sephia really has nothing except for this thing. So in order to try and rescue Nin and figure out what happened to her father, she must look at this object, and she discovers at the same time as we, the readers, discover that it is, in fact, a book, and she must teach herself to read in order to solve these mysteries and save the people she loves.
Well, it's a wonderful premise. You were inspired when you got this idea.
I absolutely was. Actually, a big part of the inspiration for this book came from going to a library. I was in college at UC Santa Cruz. I was taking my senior seminar, and my instructor took us to the special collections at McHenry Library, where they had laid out all sorts of kind of strange books that I had never even imagined. There was a book that was made out of a shoe, like a high-heeled shoe, and it had pages inside. But there was also a book that looked like what we would think of as a book, except it was made out of metal, and instead of words, it had circuitry in it. And I remember standing there in the special collections section of the library just awestruck with this idea that, like, could anything be a book if only we knew how to read it? And that kind of sparked the idea for this world where there's magical reading, and then there are characters who can read other things. They can read tracks, or they can read the ocean. So I try to explore literacy in these other ways, too.
Well, I think, you know, your writing comes across first, you know, brilliant is a word that they throw around a lot, but one sees it in your writing. I got the feeling as I'm reading, one, you're a very thoughtful person because you've really thought out the not just the plot, but the use of words, how it's laid out. It's very brilliantly done.
Thank you. Wow, thank you so much.
You know, whenever you know, we think about reading, and it's such a treasure to us to be able to do so. And when there's the story of a book, and it's how important it is to our development of our mind. This is really just beautifully done. It's very clever.
You. I have a lot of fun actually picking out the exact right word for this exact right feeling, or like spending 15 minutes trying to come up with a simile that captures an exact emotion. So I really appreciate that.
Well, you know, it reads seamlessly, but that means there was a lot of work involved in that. I don't, you know, it's always wonderful to hear from a writer who can explain that. It doesn't come out perfect, you know, in a perfect condition the first time. I'm sure that you had to fix things along the way and rewrite and hone your craft.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I have been studying creative writing. I studied it in college for 4 years, and then I got a master's in it for 2 years. So I've been working at this for over a decade, and I love revising. That's the thing. I am a terrible drafter. My drafts always come out horribly messy, but I love this process of going back in and really discovering the story, changing things, like very viciously cutting things out that aren't working. The reader went through, I think, 30, 35 drafts.
Whoa.
Before I signed with my agent, Barbara Powell, and then many more revisions with my editor after that. So it's definitely been a process, but a really enjoyable one for me.
Well, I'm excited that after we finish talking, I'm going to be talking to Barbara. And, of course, she's with the Irene Goodman Literary Agency. And they always get such wonderful clients. And I'm so anxious to hear from Barbara, her first reaction when she first encountered your work. But what was it like for you? How did you... you had done your drafts. At what point were you ready then to present it to the agency?
So, like I said, I went through about 35 drafts before I thought, it's ready. And at that point, it was 121,000 words. And I thought, it's done. This is the correct length. So I started querying agents, and I very soon realized that there are word count guidelines for a reason. So I stopped querying. I went back. I revised some more to try and get that word count down to something that's a little bit more acceptable for young adult fantasy, which is more around 100K or less. And by the time that I was kind of honing in on 100,000, this contest was coming up. It's called Pitch Wars, and it's run by this amazing author named Brenda Drake. And what she does is she rounds up about 100 different publishing professionals, so agented authors, published authors, editors, and they all work with aspiring writers, like I was at the time. So I entered this contest. I tried really, really hard to get my word count down, and I was lucky enough to be selected to work with this amazing writer, Renee Adia. She's another of Barbara's clients, and she really helped me whip that manuscript into shape. We took 2 months of hard revision. I did 2 full revisions in those 2 months, and at the end of those 2 months, Pitch Wars has an agent round where agents take a look at the pitch for your book and the very first page, and then they can make requests. And out of that, I got some requests, luckily, and Barbara snuck in there also. So that's how that one happened, and I was really lucky to be working with Renee because she is incredible, and then to have Barbara find me.
Wow. That was an exciting moment.
Yes, it was.
But, of course, it wasn't finished then.
Oh, gosh, no, it was not finished then. There was.
So at that point, your word count was what, 100K?
By the time Barbara signed me, it was down to 97. So I was very pleased with that.
Okay, it's always fun to go in there and try to get out those words. It's hard.
Just cut out huge sections.
Okay, so she gets it at 97, and then how long did it take from that point of, I'm sure that she was so excited. Agents get so excited when they find new talent, but then there's work to be done.
There was a little bit, but I was very fortunate in that Barbara was so excited, and I think she really knew how she wanted to pitch it, so we did a few revisions, and then we were off on submission, which was terrifying and also really thrilling because I was fortunate in that Barbara is a genius and got a lot of interest pretty quickly. So about a month later, I think we signed with Stacey Barney at Putnam.
Wow. And from there, it's now going to be history, and that you became an instant New York Times bestseller. That's so exciting. It must have been like, wow.
Yeah, I knew that a week after the book came out that the New York Times bestseller list was going to be released. So I made a very conscious effort to distract myself that day because I did not want to think about it. I actually opened up a jigsaw puzzle so that I wouldn't check the internet constantly or be refreshing my email inbox. And I talked to one of my friends for a couple hours, and as soon as I hung up with her, I got a call from Stacy, my editor. Barbara was on the phone, and then also the publisher at Putnam, Jen Besser, and they were so excited, and they broke the news to me. It was incredible. There's definitely some crying on my part.
Oh, wow. And so it's your debut novel. You had, before that, you had done short stories, of course, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. When I was in college, I was writing a lot of short stories.
So that I always tell my listeners that it's so good to write short stories. They really do help you to learn your craft.
Absolutely. Between every major draft of a long project, I try to write at least one short story. Just I feel like it keeps me sharp. It allows me to experiment with different styles. And they're so short that you can do a lot with them, I think, and be really adventurous.
Now, let's go back to the book a little bit, because what I realized, first of all, you wrote it from different points of view, and you managed to find the perfect voice for the characters.
Yeah.
I thought you did a great job on that.
Thank you. That's, again, the product of a lot of work and revision. I think there ended up being 8 different points of view in the reader. which was challenging to try and weave them all together.
It is a challenge when you have that many points of view and trying to get each voice to sound authentic.
Yeah, and I think that comes out of knowing your characters and knowing how they think and kind of what their attention will be drawn to. I think that's a really big part of getting the voice down, is where they're looking or what they're noticing and kind of what words they would pick to describe these things that are catching their attention and making them engage with the world.
Well, Sephia is a great character, and also a great name. It was a very nice. I've never, you know, it's always nice when you can come out with a name that nobody's ever seen before, and it's distinctive. So I like that. But then, tell us a little bit about how did the pirates get in there?
Oh gosh, I have been wanting to write kind of these outlaw pirate characters for a really long time. I got the inspiration for them actually while watching Magnificent Seven with Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah,
movie.
I fell in love with kind of these noble kind of outlaw figures who don't really pay attention to what's legal, but they have this like really deep code of honor that they abide by.
My husband looks like Yul Brynner. And yeah. And it was so funny. We were in New York one time and somebody came up to him and said, "Could I have your autograph? Are you Yul Brynner?" No, but they had seen The Magnificent Seven, so they thought he was Yul Brynner.
Oh gosh, that's fantastic. You are very fortunate.
Oh, I am. But it's a great movie, and it's so from there you get this idea for pirates?
For pirates.
Ooh.
I thought it would be cool to have kind of that Wild Westy pioneer, you know, ride into the horizon kind of feeling, but on the sea with these kind of outlaw piratey characters.
Well, I was raised in northern Michigan on Lake Superior. So, of course, we spent our days on the beach searching for treasure. My whole childhood was searching for treasure and reading books. And I loved pirate stories. So I was so happy to find that in this book.
Yeah, I grew up in San Francisco, so the Pacific Ocean was right down the street, and it played like this huge role in always having this enormous kind of vast thing out there. It was really magical.
It's so wonderful, you know, when a child reads and a child can develop this imagination. You know, that's why I think sometimes that I resent. So that children are spending so much time on games, you know, computerized games and things, and they're not using their imagination like we did.
You know, I think it's a really interesting kind of thing that's going on, because on the one hand, I completely agree. I used to make treasure hunts for my little cousins, and I would make, you know, fake maps, and I would bury the treasure for them to find. And so we really had to work our imaginations to create things out of what was around us. And I think while kids are missing out on that element now, there's a lot of exciting stuff about technology and technological literacy that I think they are gaining 21st century skills by playing video games or by playing on their phone.
Well, of course, you're a teacher in your spare time, right?
I was a teacher for a while. Yeah, I taught 7th grade English.
Yeah, so but you're not, well, definitely I don't think you're going to be doing too much teaching 7th graders right now. I'm sure you're working on a new book?
I am working on the second
book. The second?
Of Ink and Gold trilogy, yeah.
Okay, so that's going to keep you busy, huh?
Oh, yes. My desk is covered with revision notes and timelines and all of these things right now.
Well, I think that, you know, you've done a great job with this book, both from the point of view of the magic part, which you've weaved in there, and then the relationship part too, because we didn't mention, I didn't, you know, there's just so limited time, but I very much like the other characters in the story and the very sort of delicate love story that's not, doesn't overwhelm the action, because there is a lot of action in your book too.
Yeah. I really appreciate that. I worked hard in making this romance between Sephia and this mysterious boy that she comes across feel like it was organic to their characters and to the story. There's so much going on. She's so bent on figuring out what happened and getting revenge for her family that she doesn't have that much time for romance. So it definitely plays second fiddle to her quest.
And I think that's a fantastic and dramatic moment when she rescues him, and then we learn his backstory of you know what he went through and how their relationship forms throughout the book is very delicately done, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, there are two characters who are so broken in different ways. He has this very violent past that he is kind of very traumatized by, and Sephia has also a violent past. She has been raised outside of society, so in a way they're both learning how to be human again, and I think they both help each other out on that journey.
And I think we'll see a lot more about the relationship of Sephia and Archer in book two.
Oh yes, very much.
So it's a growing thing. Again, Tracy Chee, I'm so happy that I got to speak to you today. I want to mention that you have a website, a very nice website, by the way. It's very beautifully done.
Yeah, my website is just my name, TracyChee.com, TracyChee.com. And it's been a joy talking to you. I love talking about writing, so it's been a real treat.
I can tell that. And I just want to tell all my listeners, you know, your books are available everywhere, but they should also have a look at your website, because I think it says a lot about you, the sort of, right there, that word delicate. I love the way that you've set up your website, and the little things that you're selling or promoting on your website are really charming.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's a special website. You know, not all writers have great websites, but you have one of the best that I've seen. So I really enjoy just look. And I know I'm going to go back and look at it, and I can see that you enjoy putting things together, and it's a very nice.
Thank you. I am a millennial, so technology is important to me.
Well, now I'm going to talk in a few minutes. I'm going to get Barbara on the phone, and we're going to talk about her first reaction to reading your words, and as I'm sure she found that to be a magical moment coming to the reader fresh and just, wow, the first page. By the way, I was going to say, I always look at the first page, and you really, with your description of Aunt Nin, really bring this story, you know, riding in there, you know, it's great.
Thank you. I really appreciate your kind words. Thank you so much.
Okay, so I think everybody will have a wonderful read if they get the reader, and just enjoy it. And I think it's a perfect gift for anyone. You know, I know that they say for 14 up, and I think you could go up to, you know, 84, because it's just a lovely world that you've created there.
And thank you. I hope that lots of different readers can enjoy it.
Oh, I'm sure they will. And well, what can you say? Instant. That's going to be one of your favorite words. By the way, do you have a favorite word?
Yes, my favorite word is asterisk.
Oh,
I love the way it sounds.
It is a nice word. Okay. Well, now they'll just, every time, wait till they get, your next big step is going to be, now you'll have to be on Wikipedia, so they can put that in there. Okay.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
That would be. Okay. Well, take care, and I'm going to talk to Barbara about you in a few minutes, so if you hear your ears ringing, it's we're talking about you.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Okay. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my next guest, Barbara Powell, who is Tracy Cheese's literary agent. Hi, Barbara.
Well, hello, Patsy. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, wow. It's so good to talk to you. We were just talking to Tracy, and she's such a darling girl. She is just delightful. And I was, so thrilled to be able to put this together, talking to her first and then talking to you. So that my listeners, who are always anxious to hear about what did an agent see in a book when they first get it in their hands. So before we'll talk a little bit about what it's like to be an agent and all of that stuff after, but just that moment, the first time you read the first page, how did you feel about the reader?
Well, I have to say, it was, to be honest and to get a little flowery here, it was sort of like, if you imagine the Eiffel Tower, but covered in fudge, because the foundation was so strong, the technical writing just so solid, but the prose incredibly lush, and I knew I was holding something magical in my hands. And then as I was reading and the Easter egg started to develop in so far as the little secret tricks that are happening within the actual construct of the novel, sometimes I'm going to give one away, but if you take the first letter of every word in a certain section, it spells something out. So there was so much for your mind to play with while you were just enjoying a fabulous story.
Well, I mentioned to Tracy that I realized as I'm reading the book and when I finished it that she's a very thoughtful writer. She's put so much thought and care into not just the storyline, the every word.
Absolutely. And I mean, as an adult, I absolutely enjoyed her writing and the transformative process of reading her writing. But I have two children, Charlotte and Sylvia, and they're 4 and 2 right now. And these are the kind of adventures that I am so proud to advocate for, because it's like I want them to be having these kind of adventures and reading as well. And with Tracy, it was just from soup to nuts, a magical journey.
Well, it's so exciting. It must be so exciting when you get somebody like this and the first time and you realize you've got a real treasure in your hand.
Yes, and as you're reading, you're just saying, it can't possibly stay this good. Oh my gosh, it's staying this good. It can't possibly stay this good. Oh, it's even better than I thought. It's a very it's a very electrical process that sort of happens where suddenly, where I'm towards the end of the book, I'm practically on my feet while I'm reading because, you know, having someone pull off a novel just in general is pretty fabulous, but a novel like this is transformative.
And, of course, she mentioned that it was 97,000 words when you first got it.
Right, yes. And the way that I first got it was just kind of a lovely way because I think she had mentioned to you that she had participated in pitch wars with my author being her mentor, which is my author is Renee Atia. She is also a New York Times bestseller for her series, the first in the series, The Wrath and the Dawn and The Rose and the Dagger. She gave me a call and said, you need to stop everything you're doing and you've got to read this book by this person I'm mentoring in pitch wars. And I said, okay, sure. And like you said, after that first paragraph, I read it in one sitting and practically, you know, with all the saliva in my mouth dried up because my jaw was dropped so hard while I read. And she had several offers of representation, and I just went after this like, you know, a lion on a gazelle. I just went nuts.
Wow, that's a great description. And you got her. And
yeah.
But, wow, you did something with her. I mean, this is what you accomplished is pretty great, making her an instant, I love that word, instant New York Times.
New York Times. Oh, it's my favorite phrase. And I have to say, I give a lot of credit to Stacey Barney, her editor at Putnam Books for Young Readers, and to Jen Besser, who's the publisher over there. And with their support system and the teamwork, I mean, everything from her publicist to the whole team had so much to do with Tracy's success because she gave us the product. And it was an easy sell because it's just such a beautifully written novel.
Wow. So she told us how excited she was when the three of you got her on the phone and told her.
Well, and that's a funny story, too, because I, too, was a little bit, oh, you know, I'm hoping, but I'm not going to invest the time of, you know, constantly clicking refresh. So Stacey and Jen actually were the ones that called me and told me. And I believe the response I had is probably not appropriate to share on air, but I really... pretty much every colorful phrase you could think of exploded out of my body because I just had hoped for this so much and I knew it was a well-deserved honor and I'm just so pleased that it happened for her.
Well, it's always so exciting when a new talent comes to life like this and instantly.
Instant New York Times.
Yeah, I love it. Well, you know, of course, I had already mentioned that you are with the Irene Goodman Literary Agency and... I love Irene. You know, she was my very first guest on my program.
Oh, how fabulous.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she is. I think working with her is a privilege and an honor. And I mean, she, whenever I think I'm being tough, all I have to do is eavesdrop on some of her phone conversation. And I'm like, oh, I still got a ways to go. So yeah, she's a great mentor, a great colleague, and a great friend.
So, now this pitch wars that you mentioned, does this take place and how do
you know? It actually just finished right now. Brenda Drake again is the author that had created this, and it just finished. I believe they shared their works something like the 3rd to the 8th. Please don't quote me on that, as I just said it on radio. I'm not exactly sure of the dates, but in something like this, I do have authors that participate as mentors during the pitch wars. And like this year, M.K. England is one of my authors who. During Pitch Wars last year, she just queried me while Pitch Wars was going on, and I signed her and I sold her to HarperCollins, and so she this year was being a mentor and just was kind of giving me a heads up again, just like Renee did, like, hey, there's some great stuff coming across the pipelines here, just check it out. And I checked my queries inbox, and people have been querying me alongside Pitch Wars. So it's a fantastic opportunity for authors, especially when you couple it with this month being NaNoWriMo. There's just a lot of focus on creative energy right now, and I think that's a great fulcrum from which to pivot from if you're at that point with your manuscript.
And are there other events like Pitch Wars since it's too late for this year for this one?
Yeah, I would just start snooping around online. That's what I would recommend. You know, whatever stage you're at in your manuscript, there's always a support system, but you have to do the work to find it. I know that a lot of my clients have found each other on Twitter and are very supportive of each other through that and are readers for each other and can provide a really nice foundation for wherever you are with the manuscript. So I would just highly recommend just start snooping. Start with Pitch Wars. Just Google Pitch Wars and take it from there.
Now, do you accept queries? You're open to queries?
I am open to queries. And anyone who's listening, it's barbara.queries@irenegoodman.com. Generally, I do 95% fiction and 5% nonfiction. I'm very particular with nonfiction. I do a lot of genre, adult and YA, some middle grade, a lot of the big ones, thrillers, mysteries, suspense. I'm very, very grounded right now and very excited to have three out of my last five New York Times bestsellers were authors of color featuring protagonists of color. And I'm really into helping to advocate for, you know, marginalized voices and representing all of America, the tapestry that is America in the books that I represent.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, so people send you query letters and
yep.
you read them and
yep.
do you respond to everyone?
You know, I'm horribly embarrassed to say this because I can do better. I have an autoresponder that says, if I'm interested, I'll get back to you in 8 to 10 weeks. Currently, and this is horrible, I'm going to hide under my desk as I say this, I have roughly 1,090 queries in my inbox, and I go through them as fast as I can. I do not use an assistant or an intern to go through my queries. I read all of them myself, so you are getting my eyes on your query. But, you know, when I have upwards of, you know, 45, 50 clients, I'm dedicating time to them. I have found that lately I can do a better job at digging into my queries, and I will do a better job because I just reassessed my list, and 60% of my authors, the majority of my authors, have come from queries, blind queries. And I'm so excited about that because there's gold in them there, Hills.
Wow, but that is a lot.
Sometimes,
you know, all authors get anxious and they don't know, they never know, you know, if you've actually read it or haven't read it, or if you're going to respond or not respond, and then what has to be in that. Now, of course, it's no longer a letter. In the old days, it used to be a letter, and everybody'd worry about it. Am I putting it on the right paper? Am I using the right?
Yeah.
You know, people would get really crazy about it.
Well, Patsy, let me tell you a little trick I would say to your listeners as far as querying goes. The really little device that I use, it's easy to remember. When you do your query letter, you're going to talk about the hook, the book, and the cook. Now, the hook is going to be something straightforward, you know, great white shark terrorizes small New England town over 4th of July. So that's Jaws. And then the book section is going to be 4 or 5 lines of premise, not plot, premise of the book. And then the cook section is going to be a small bio about you. And that bio can say, you know, I'm a stay-at-home dad with 3 children, and I wrote this in my spare time. Or it can be, you know, I've been published at such and such a place, and I got a writing grant from such and such. The bio part doesn't really matter as far as I'm not looking. It's not your resume as far as how qualified you are to write. It's just a little something about why this book, why you, why now. So, again, your query letter should just simply be the hook, the book, and the cook. I think Sophie Littlefield is an author of mine who has the best query letter, and I asked her to put her query letter on her website for people to refer to. So SophieLittlefield.com, I believe, is her website, and it's just a very straightforward query, but you'll see everything broken down perfectly, what I was looking for. And that query, I mean, she sent me that query 10 years ago. She's been my client for 9 years plus. So, I mean, to me, that still stands the test of time as a very solidly written query.
Okay, I think lots of people are going to be rushing to that website because they are. It is a difficult task, and it's sometimes, you know, authors feel, I can write the book, but I can't write the query.
Well, then I'll tell your authors and your listeners another secret, and don't groan, but if I read the opening part of the query and I like the hook and I read a little bit of the premise, I'm going to skip right down to the pages. If I like what you're saying as far as if I see something that sparks my personal subjective interest, I'm going to go right to the pages and check you out. Funnily enough, some of the worst verbal pitches I've ever received are from said author Sophie Littlefield and another author of mine who's a number one New York Times bestseller, Graham Brown. They're not able to like talk about their books, but boy, they can write to start a forest fire, I'll tell you that. So I care about the craft, technique, and detail of your novel more than I do about your query letter. So try not to sweat the small stuff and the details in that. And the hook, the book, and the cook can never steer you wrong.
Well, I love Graham Brown. He was on my program. He's good.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's a hoot.
He is. He was so good. It was a fantastic interview. I so enjoyed talking to him. So, okay, well, that is great advice because that is exactly very succinct and something that, you know, writers who are trying and dreaming about, you know, finding an agent can really use that advice.
Yeah, the toolbox for a writer is so much more than just a keyboard and a screen. And I think that's why when we talk about things like getting out there and connecting with people on social media or in writers groups, or heck, even a book club that you're involved in and talking about what's working in a book that you love, all of those are part of the writer's toolbox.
When, how much does it mean to you if an author, for example, it has... put some of their work out there and they have a following, they've already developed a following through social media. Does that impress you when you're reading a query?
I mean, if we're talking about nonfiction, it's kind of the most important point as far as what your platform is. But setting nonfiction aside, no. Nothing truly matters to me except the material, the authenticity of the material, the passion of the material, the pacing of the material, you know, the craft, technique, and detail of a novel. So for me, it all starts with the novel.
Now, once you've read a query and you mm-hmm. write to the author and you say you're willing to look at it, what do you ask for?
I always ask for the full manuscript. Back in the olden days, I would go home with partial printouts because back then we didn't use email. We'd have, you know, just paper everywhere. So I would ask for the first three chapters, and I would take home an extra bag every night on the subway and have the first three chapters of about 11 or 12 novels, and then I would ask for more. Nowadays, since it's the same, you know, attachment either way, and since I do most of my, for pleasure I read books, but for work I read on a Kindle, and so I do all attachments, so I ask for the, I'll go from 10 pages, which is the normal query, like when you send me a query, it's the query letter and the first 10 pages in the body of the email, and if I ask for more, it's always going to be the full novel. Why not, right?
Why not? And then you just put it on your Kindle and you can sit there and read it.
Also, it's important for me to have the full novel because if there's some dissonance in the read, sometimes I can say, okay, let me just keep going and let's see if this is something revisable, something I can, prop up. So it's important to have the whole manuscript because if something was slouchy in the third or fourth chapter but yet rejuvenated itself later, I wouldn't know that if I just had the first three chapters and I would pass.
Well, you know, it's, I think... being an agent is a dream job in many ways because, I mean,
what's better than getting,
you know, making a living off of reading? It's like, oh, so perfect.
It is. And I'll tell you, it's like even I would compare it to being like a chef in a 5-star restaurant. Like I spend all this day cooking this magnificent food. And then when it's time for me to have a break, what do? I cook something. So when I'm reading all for work, as soon as I'm done reading and I'm like, whew, I need a break, I pick up a novel to take my break. So I'm one of the luckiest people that my passion and my vocation are married. And it's just a wonderful job. I mean, through and through, it's what I was born to do.
Well, that's the question. What was your background? Did you study literature in college? What?
I did not. My degree is actually in acting. Ta-da!
Ah.
So that when I say that I was born to do this, it's basically my personal toolbox, I think, is equipped to balance everything this job entails. My mother is a voracious reader. I'm going to guess she reads 300 books a year easily. And so is my sister. And so it's my secret superpower that I'm a voracious reader and I can read very quickly. Coupled with I don't really have a lot of filters, so when I'm passionate about something, I go nuts for it. And I think there is a lot of, when you're working in a position of advocate, there's a lot of just personal passion that needs to go into it. And when I believe in something, it's much more fun to work on, obviously. So I think that's just this bizarre, unique skill set that I came to this for this particular job has just worked out for me.
And, of course, being an actor... you see things visually, so it helps, I think, when you're reading, you can actually see sort of play it in your head.
I've never really thought about that. I think that's incredibly astute of you, but I bet, yeah, I think it all unrolls in my head like a film, or when I'm looking at children's books, definitely like a staged play when you're trying to think of, you know, an illustrator and the technical prose of a novel going together or a children's book going together, you do kind of set it up like a stage play.
Yeah, I think so. That's the actor's mind. That's sort of how I do it too. I'm also a frustrated actress. One of the things, of course, with Tracy's book is that this world where nobody reads was like, at first it was so frightening to me.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine anything more horrible than that.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and that's the thing. It kind of taps the fear button for us, and then we go on this adventure. And you know, education is the path to redemption. You know, reading is the path to redemption for all of us. And so I feel like this book speaks so much to that, but still is just a wild adventure.
It is. And I know she's busy on the second book. And
yes.
this is exciting. Now, of course, you managed to make this into an instant bestseller. Is it
instant? An instant New York Times bestseller.
Instant,
yes.
New York. How often have you been involved in auctions? Auctions are something that happens once in a while?
The auction. So I can use Tracy as a good example of this. So we were prepared for the auction on, gosh, I'm not going to remember the specific date, but it was around the holidays. So I said, everybody, you know, gather your forces. We are going to be setting a close for such and such a time on such and such a day. So everyone gathered their forces, but then Stacy and Jen, in their infinite wisdom, came in the day before with what we call a preemptive offer. Basically, will you take it off the table for blank? The first blank they gave me, I said no. The second blank they gave me, I blinked a few times and said, I need to call the author.
Ah.
So in that case, the auction was set, and it was taken away by Putnam the day before. Now, that could happen at any moment. That could happen at any time. Every path for publication is a different exploration of the final, of how you get to the sale. I mean, I've had authors that I've represented for 5 years, and I've said, stick with me, we'll get there, and book after book doesn't sell. And finally, we get there. And I've had books where I sign the author, I go out with on a Tuesday, and I have an offer on a Wednesday. So no two paths are the same, and I would highly recommend authors out there, you keep your eyes on your own paper. You walk your own path. What happened for author A and author B is not going to happen for you. And so I would say that when people get so excited and so focused on the idea of what is an auction and how to get to an auction, I've sold books for a fabulous deals that weren't at auction, that were just a single editor and publisher that believed so much in that book. And I've done, you know, multiple house, multiple round auctions as well. To me, getting that author and that book on the publishing path that will best serve the novel and the career of the author is the most important part, not how the sausage was made.
Wow. It's just such an exciting job. It's just beautiful.
It is. It's pretty great. Every day, I mean, my husband will tell you this, I put my feet on the floor and I say, another day in paradise. I think my kids will parrot that from time to time, too, because, again, it's a lucky person to say, I have the marriage between my passion and my vocation is very solid.
Well, I'm so thrilled to talk to you. I know that so many of my listeners are thinking about submitting queries, and so if they're not overwhelmed by the idea that you have 1,090 in your inbox,
I will get to you. You
get there eventually.
Yes, so I do.
I just want to thank you so much, you know, for being on, and I'm always eager to first of all to, you know, get to know new books and get to know new authors. So always feel free to come to me when you've got somebody, because I also, like you, I like to encourage writers and to really help promote their books, because it is such a wonderful thing when a listener will come to me and say, oh, wow, I heard about that book, I read it, and sometimes I get them telling me, it's changed my life. I recognize something in that book that was just help me to sort of deal with my own problems. And that's a wonderful feeling. And as I said, Tracy did a great job here with her character, Cephia, and Archer, the boy that she rescues in the book. And I think there's parallels to some of the real problems that people face.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I think that's very astute of you.
I think I think that's why it caught on, because it's many layered. It's not a one-dimensional book. There are so many layers to it. And of course that is part of your brilliance, that you recognized it and saw all of the possibilities here for this book. So
thank you very much. And it's been a real privilege to be on your show. And I hope you don't regret this day that you said, you can come on again sometime. I'll be knocking on your door all the time, because I'm like the cruise director on a fantasy ship that is never going to stop sailing. I mean, the idea that I am part of the process of bringing such beautiful creative works to fruition is just a joy, and I love to share that. So why not share with you?
And right here on Joy on Paper, because that's...
Exactly. I fed it in.
You got it in there. Because that's, I mean, that's what we're about. And I like you, when I read that first page and I say, oh, wow, I can't stop. So...
It's
just wonderful to talk to somebody with the same kind of mind. So,
fabulous.
Well, I again, thank you so much, and say hi to Irene. I'm so grateful that she sent you my way, and I will definitely have you on again. And maybe next time I could open the lines, and some of my listeners could call in and ask you questions.
Oh, that would be a ball. You count me in for that, Patsy, 100%.
Okay, I'll do that, because they always are full of questions, and you have the answer, so it's just fantastic.
Thanks so much.
Okay, and have
Take
a happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye now. Oh, wow. I really enjoy that interview, both of them. Just to think that their barber was, she opens the manuscript, and wow, there she falls in love with Tracy's book. So it's very exciting. So remember what Barbara advised you: the hook, the book, and the cook. And so when you're doing your query letter, make sure that you cover those bases. And again, I want to remind everyone that tonight, Tuesday night, is going to be a fun night. If you go down to Wordier Than Thou and at Studio 620 in downtown St. Petersburg. Gino Bardi's going to be there, and his book, The Cow in the Doorway, is funny. It's set in 1968, so anyone who lived in 1968 will enjoy going back in time. And for anyone who just wonders what it was like, Gino certainly captures it. So it's just a fun read, and it will be fun to listen to him read, because he's just a marvelous guy, and I hope that you can make it down there tonight. And it starts at 7 o'clock. So it's a place. Go to their website if you can first, and they have all the explanation of the parking available there at the studio620.org. Website, and you can go there and get the details. And I'm going to be down there, so if you come, I'll meet you, and we can have a few minutes to chat, and I can tell you some more things about some of the agents that I've been talking to who are accepting queries, especially for young adult fiction. There's quite a demand, as Tracy Chi has discovered with her book, The Reader, which is now available on Amazon and was an instant New York Times bestseller. And I think you will enjoy it. It's, as I said, it's a fantasy fiction, but it's not just for young adults. It's sort of middle adults and up there, when anybody who likes fantasy. And it is very well written, as Barbara said. Wow. Anyway, I want everyone to join me on Thursday, because I have David Baldacci. My goodness, I can't forget that. And a local author, Rita Moreau, she's going to be in. Her book, Feisty Nuns, is hilarious. I love it. And we will really have a good time talking first to David and then to Rita. So join me on Thursday right here on Tantalk Radio at 11 o'clock. And meanwhile, find your joy and share it and say something nice to somebody. I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed, for all your help, because he is so wonderful, and he's so so patient with me when I forget things. So I just want to thank Ed and everybody else out there. Say something nice to somebody today. Just a random stranger. Say something. And put a smile on their face. Okay, bye for now.